Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. All of us have been looking at the financial system and what's coming out of Washington and what's coming out of what I didn't realize was such a big industry of fake financial news. So I'm lucky I've met Mel Matheson, who can tell you actual real numbers and news that you need to know about the market, the jobs market, and what is going on in the country. Thank you for joining me again, Mel.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you. And I'm really excited that I found you because I have so many questions about what is going on. So first and foremost, you looked at the jobs report last week. You kind of analyzed it. There's a lot of every time that these people go on TV, these spokespeople for the White House, they're saying that we're all just kind of idiots. And really, the economy's great. The jobs numbers are great. But everyone knows that that's not true. So what is really going on? What did you find when you dug into this?
Exactly. When you dig into the jobs report, and the same thing when you dig into the inflation numbers, which are always skewed by the government to the upside. So it's always worse than it actually looks. But even their actual numbers are bad when you dig past the headlines. And so, for example, in the jobs report, the way the Bureau of Labor Statistics breaks it out, they don't do immigrants versus non-immigrants. They do foreign-born versus natural-born in their statistics. Yeah. And so you can get the numbers that they report on that. So the Biden administration that talk about how great the economy is, but if you actually look at it, 1.1 million jobs were created in the last year going to foreign-born. 700,000 were lost by American-born. And these are in their numbers, you know. So, and when you look in it even more deeply and you look at it more closely, they're tracking the total increase in, for example, the foreign-born population. And it was around 3 million people increased into the labor force, but 1.1 million jobs. So basically, we had 3 million people of working age, foreign-born, come into the workforce, take 1.1 million jobs, while Americans lost 700,000 jobs. And then 2 million of those foreign-born people of working age, which is kind of 16 and over, by the way they calculate things, did not enter the workforce. And so siphoning off, you know, public services, right, health and human services, and all of that.
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable what's happening. And just the full-on gaslighting. Now, we just saw Janet Yellen was in China, and she was talking about out of both sides of her mouth. And one minute she's saying, we need to, you know, tamp down and do this and that to, you know, protect America from China. On the other side, she's talking about we need to do more business with China. Then she comes back. She has, and her and Powell are saying two different things. So what are they talking about? They talk about one day they're talking about raising rates. Then the next day they're not. Then they, it just seems like they're trying to create chaos in the minds of we the people. So what do you actually see going on between Janet Yellen and all of her mixed statements and Powell coming out and making also very vague statements? What are these people talking about and what do they look like they're doing?
Yes. Janet Yellen, I think, is really the one masterminding and quarterbacking things in the administration and making these economic calls. Obviously, I don't think Joe Biden is sophisticated enough or mentally competent enough at this stage in his life to do that. So she's really the one that is in charge. And, you know, we've entered what is a financial term. It's called fiscal dominance. It's essentially where the monetary authorities, the central bank, really does not have any choice on what they can or cannot do because the fiscal situation, the finances of the federal government are such that even if interest inflation continues to go up, which it is, even in their own numbers, we've had 0.3% month-on-month inflation in January, 0.4 in February, 0.4 in March. We only had it one time above 0.4 in the entire, you know, last 12-month period. So this is the highest inflation the last 3 months that we've seen in a long time. It bottomed out in October at 0.1%, and it's been doing nothing but going up. So more inflation is coming, and Powell would like to raise rates or maybe keep rates where they're at. But when he comes out and talks, he talks about, well, you know, we think it'll be time to start lowering rates in the summer or maybe a little later than that, but our next step's going to be to lower. And a lot of market watchers on the mainstream media, they scratch their heads and they say, what is this guy talking about? Inflation is skyrocketing and he's talking about cutting rates. And it doesn't make sense until you understand two things. Number one, high rates are stimulative in this economy. And the reason why is because most Americans, their biggest debt is their homes, and they've got fixed rates at 3-4%. So higher rates aren't really affecting them that much. Then you've got the corporate side. In a year or two, they're going to need to reshuffle their balance sheets and reissue corporate debt, but they're still good right now. But the government last month in March paid out $79 billion in net interest compared to $70 billion to defense. And that is money. That's like quantitative easing. That's money that the government is paying out. So you have $6 trillion in money market funds that used to collect zero interest, and now they're getting 5% a year. That's $300 billion a year in stimulus through money market funds. Wow. So if they raise rates, it actually is fueling the inflationary fire. And if they cut rates, then that also fuels the inflationary fire. And so there is no path that I see going forward where we do not enter a long and sustained period of higher inflation. And I'm talking like 5-10% a year, perhaps for the rest of the decade. And that's probably like a best case scenario.
Oh, wow. Now, last week or about a week and a half ago, Jamie Dimon had a meeting at the White House. It wasn't widely reported at all, but he did. And then the next day he put out his yearly letter to all of the people under him, you know, and he had a very bleak outlook on America. Yet again, we still see that him and people like Larry Fink and all of them, they're still very invested in the idea of ESGs and green energy and all of this stuff that is proving to be a real problem for the economy. What do you make of, I don't know if you saw, both of their letters came out to their shareholders in the last couple of weeks, both very dire sounding to me, yet both still dwelling on the things that that I think are the big problem, the green stuff, the ESG, all of that. So both of them seem to be in working with the White House messaging. But then when they send the letters to their shareholders, they're saying, listen, buckle up. We're in big trouble ahead.
Yeah, I did see both of those letters. Larry Fink's, he's the guy that basically gave us the mortgage-backed security crash.
Right.
And I think he's in the process of engineering another crash, because if you read that letter, it's just talking about how the key to Americans having a good life is to throw all their money into the stock market, which of course means going into the funds that his company takes management fees on.
Right.
And that's the only way to create wealth. For those that didn't see the letter, he talks about this story about how when his parents died, he found out they had so much money that he never knew, and because they were modest people, and they made it through the stock market. Well, you know what, Larry? If you can guarantee that the next 50 years are going to be like the past 50 years, then you've got a good idea. But the last 50-year period that his parents were doing that was the golden age of the American economy.
Exactly.
That was like, as it's the same thing with Warren Buffett. And going forward, we are at 126% of GDP. We have a currency that is crashing when you measure it against gold. We have an issue where last year, when interest rates got to 5%, the economy almost collapsed in October. And Jamie Dimon's writing about in his letter that he's preparing JP Morgan to handle 8% interest rates.
Right.
Well, 8% interest rates, I mean, you can't do that. I mean, they don't understand what that would do. The government would be paying out hundreds of billions of dollars a month in interest payments. We have $9 trillion that the federal government needs to refinance in the next 12 months.
Yeah.
If they were going to start paying 7-8%, and what happens is that becomes stimulative to the economy, as I said, that just becomes interest payments that the government starts shelling out. It becomes a death spiral. And so you get into the situation where you cannot raise rates. It's stimulative to the economy. You can't fight inflation that way. And so there's no way to, and if you crash the economy to bring down inflation, this was the big problem last year. Mm-hmm. They thought the deficit was going to be around 1.1, 1.2 trillion. And then the stock market went down and all of the tax receipts collapsed, and we had a $2 trillion deficit. Because if you collapse the economy to bring down inflation, then the government goes broke, because now they're not getting their tax receipts, because the whole government tax wheel now is all about capital gains in the stock market, which is also our retirement system.
Right.
So there's no way out of this except inflation. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, we talked about last time, they've all been pushing the central bank digital currency, and you're seeing more and more the World Bank, IMF, BIS that we talked about last time, kind of acting as if that's already a done deal. And then you're watching these people, especially Larry Fink, who also is on the board of the World Economic Forum, the CFR, you know, doing business openly with China. It appears to me when I look at some of these people, of course, Fink, but Vanguard, State Street, all these different funds, that their business model is based on a future that is the global markets, not the American markets. And when you look into what Biden Harris put out in September of 2023, their halfway to Agenda 2030, it's on the White House website. I tell people to look at it. You go look at their commitment to the global goals in Agenda 2030, and you read down that, and they align out all this money, trillions, it looks like about $3 trillion going towards global funds and global this and global that. Like, it just appears that these people are not, they're living in a post-America world without telling us. That's what it feels like.
Yes, no, it's exactly true. And when you look at it, you know, whether it's Yellen, whether you're talking about the bankers like Fink or JP Morgan, which one interesting kind of side note on JP Morgan, by the way, they were recently appointed a trustee of the GLD, the gold ETF.
Oh, wow.
And this is Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan. I mean, anyone who follows financial history, they know there's a connection between the House of Morgan and the United States government that is, you know, thick. They're thick as thieves.
Yes.
There's a special kind of relationship, let's say, like we talk about a special relationship with Israel or something.
Right.
There's a special relationship between JP Morgan and the government.
Right.
And what was interesting is, you know, for people that love gold, I love gold. I think it's a great investment, especially given the inflation that I perceive coming. A lot of people invest in it through the GLD, which is the
right.
ETF. And for the entire history of that, there's been one vault that's been operated by HSBC that's been in London. And kind of out of nowhere, JP Morgan gets added and they're going to start storing gold and have vaults in Zurich and New York.
Wow.
And so what are they preparing for? And a lot of people that really follow gold, they understand that, you know, there's like a whole side financial market with gold that suppresses the price. There's the
right.
leasing of gold. People don't take physical delivery. And what's happening, people in the East now are actually taking physical delivery. They're buying the gold. And, you know, one has to wonder, you know, what's in these ETFs? What is in, you know, the Federal Reserve vaults that's supposed
right.
to be there? And so that's one of the things that I think is also important for listeners to be aware of and to understand the difference between owning gold through an ETF and actually having it at home or in a safe or somewhere that, you know, it's being stored for you.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've worked with my friend Andrew at Beverly Hills Precious Metals for 3 years, and he's really taught me a lot about the difference that physical gold is totally different than what they're talking about, and that those ETFs could be sold multiple times over, like we found out that could have happened with mortgages as well. So on top of that, it does look like gold is trying to inch above 2,400 and then it goes down. But there were a bunch of people that work with JP Morgan, I believe, that were actually, I think they were convicted of manipulating gold prices and all of that. So we're at a place where they're kind of handing the keys to the hen house, to the wolves there when it comes to gold.
Yes. Exactly. That's kind of the, you know, people have to remember their history. They have to remember the confiscation in
right.
1930 by FDR, Executive Order 6102, when they seized the gold. They made gold was illegal to own in this country for decades. You know, Rand Paul on the Tucker interview, he talked about how he used to buy gold, like Mexican gold coins, and claim it was for numismatic or
right.
coin collecting value,
right.
Because it was illegal to have it. And so there's a situation here, and this goes right into your also point about CBDCs. And
right.
I think, you know, the people do not want CBDCs. So the only way they're going to get them in place, I think, is they're going to have to concoct a scam where it becomes very difficult for people to say no. And I think what
right.
that scam is there is a letter recently submitted to the Federal Reserve, the controller of the currency, by basically a lobbying group for the banks and the financial services, ISDA, the International like Securities Derivatives Association. And they want to have like zero reserves on, or they want to have they want to have the treasuries that the bank holds, so the debts that the bank holds, not count against their quote tier one capital, so that they can keep lending against it. Now, why is that important? Because the Treasury completely understands that they're going to have to issue so much debt that they don't want to do the front door quantitative easing Fed buying. But if you take away the reserve ratio from treasuries and allow banks to buy treasuries, then you get this huge source of treasury buying that which can keep those yields down, and they right. need the interest rates down or they crash the economy. So they're putting all these backdoor things that unless you're like following ISDA, right. you know, letters to the Fed, you have no idea. Or why is this important for the tier one ratios? They're putting all these mechanisms in place so that they can issue these massive debts and still deal with it. Now, last thing I'd add is the inflation is going to be so bad, and this is what typically happens when you get into these fiscal dominance situations, is right. that banks are not allowed to deposit treasuries and get interest on it. Right now they are. And right now there's deposits that are being held. And if the banks wanted to, they could pass that interest on. Some banks do, the big banks don't. In a fiscal dominant situation, that becomes relatively impossible for kind of economic reasons. And so you get into a situation where you have inflation and people cannot get an interest rate on their deposits. And I think that they could use CBDCs to say, if you deposit your money in the CBDCs, that's the only place you're going to get a real interest that's going to, you know, even partially keep up with inflation. So if it's 7% inflation, we'll pay you 4% interest. If you put it into a regular bank account, you get zero interest. And so they're basically going to start incentivizing right. people financially. And this is all of this is in the white papers. It's in the letters. It's in the stuff behind the scenes, but it's out in the open too. If right. you just, you know, look at the research.
That's what I say to people. I say, yeah, it's all conspiracy theory until you go to their websites and read it for yourself. And then you're like, oh my God. Because like I said, they have this whole global governance model I cover a lot and I follow that money. We talked about the BIS and all of them last time. But also there's a whole lot of money going to illegals. $300 million again, put out by DHS, Mayorkas. Apparently Samantha Power is spreading money all over the world through USAID. So again, we have a lot of spending that has nothing to do with America. We have all these wars now escalating again. All this spending is coming from somewhere and it's not coming from the places that are involved in the wars. And at this point, the American manufacturing sector, our GDP is down, but they're saying, yay, it's not down because we're making weapons for wars, but they're not even making them at any pace that is keeping up anyway. So what's the American people to what do they need to understand? Because this is stuff that goes over a lot of people's heads, but for the first time in a long time, people are feeling it when they go to the supermarket, when they go to the gas station, but they're being told it's transitory. But you and I know that on the side, they're like, wink, wink, not really. So what should the American people know about what's going on that affects them directly? Because until there is a real crash, people kind of look like, oh, well, it's just like any other time in history. I don't think that that's true, because I think that the end goal here is the central bank digital currency. And I've been hearing a lot of people out there, just talking, saying, well, I don't use cash anyway, not understanding. No, the central bank digital currency, first of all, are programmable tokens. Second, it's not American. And on top of that, they have a monitoring side of it. They don't even hide it, that they'll have a social credit score, ESG type side of it for the individuals. So what should the people know that could at least empower them to stop listening and to start seeking people like you and other people that are trying to actually give them real information? We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Well, I do think, you know, Americans, they understand when something starts to impact them. So yes. you know, and people have busy lives. They don't have time to spend all day, you know, reading through white papers on, you know, monetary policy. But when it, when there are these moments of crisis, then all of a sudden they start tuning in. And, you know, it, throughout American history, there's been tons of times when monetary policy and things like this were number one issues. You know, William Jennings Bryan had one of the most famous political speeches ever, the Cross of Gold speech. That was about monetary policy, you know, talking about removing silver as legal currency and making it basically only gold, and do not, you know, crucify us on this cross of gold. It was a huge, huge issue. And we're getting into one of those times. I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be one of those times where people are going to start to become familiar with terms like fiscal dominance, or they're going to understand how inflation is really a tax, and that it's that the government, to finance these deficits, they're taxing the heck out of us. They're not doing it by raising the income tax rates. They're doing it by the inflation tax. And, you know, when economists, you know, model this stuff, it's there. So I think that people are picking up that this is one of those times that you have to start paying attention and understand that the economic policies that are putting in place right now are going to impact your day-to-day lives. And like you said, they're seeing it in the grocery store. They're seeing it when they want to take their kids out for a movie and a pizza and it costs them $150. I mean, it's out of control. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's also, if your way of life and your lifestyle is dramatically affected, which it is now, plus I see that defaulting on debt, especially credit card debt, is at an all-time high, and something's got to give with that. But then last week we see Joe Biden decide to pay off a couple hundred thousand student loans, mostly of people, they don't realize that the DEI aspect or to the back of that, of who's getting paid off. You see people from the government or from Center for American Progress gloating about their student loans being written off. No, they're not being written off. What really is the impact on the people that they're spending billions of dollars to pay off people's student loans, mostly people that get jobs within the government or the private sector aligned with the government?
Yeah. Well, number one, besides buying votes, which is, you know, part and parcel of their playbook, the other thing that it's doing is that stimulus. Like they're doing everything they can to juice the economy right now. Right. So if you have all of a sudden somebody needs to pay $600 a month to a student loan, that person's not going to take that and probably put it into a, you know, a CD or savings account. They're going to go out and they're going to start spending it. And so This is stimulus to juice the economy. It has 16 times, I think, since World War II or in the last 100 years or something like that, you know, a president has been running for reelection. And every single one of those 16 years, the stock market has gone up. Because the politicians, I mean, and Yellen, you know, I talked about her being the mastermind. I mean, she's the one that's really, you know, playing all the games. Like, you know, last year, you know, when the interest on the 10-year treasury bond was getting close to, or note was getting close to 5%, and the economy was starting to crash, the stock market was starting to crash in October of last year, S&P went down 10%, and it would have gone down 20 if people didn't step in. You know, she started, instead of the Treasury, when they issue new debt, doing what they normally do, you know, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, 30-year type bonds, she started just issuing tons and tons of like 3-month bills and just flooding the system with these short-term bonds, because that's keeping those rates at the longer end down. And so what she's doing now, and this is a big week for her. This is where she's going to get the big money, right? It's tax day. So The money's going to come in, and all of a sudden what she's going to be able to do is she's going to be able to tamp down issuing more treasuries. And she's going to spend that $1 trillion she's going to get this month or more in income tax receipts. And that's stimulus, because it's money that the government is going to be spending that they're not paying out interest on or selling bonds into the market. And so forgiving loans, she's going to start paying a lot of this out of the TGA, the Treasury General Account, which is essentially quantitative easing. There's going to be like $1 trillion of quantitative easing we're going to see in the next 6 months so that the economy looks great, but it's going to be inflationary. And so these are all the tricks that Yellen is turning all the dials and the levers, and she's going to China. Right. And, you know, she claims to be going there to stop people from dumping green tech on the world market. And, you know, I wish that we had a Treasury Secretary go over to China when our coal miners were losing their jobs, when our steel manufacturers were losing their jobs. She's like, we need to protect the green energy industry in the United States.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they made fun of her. They said after she left, her counterpart in China gave a speech I saw where he was kind of saying, I don't know what she thinks she's saying. She's telling us to stop building our own electric vehicles because it's not fair to their electric vehicle market. And he's like, I don't know who she thinks she is or what world she thinks she's functioning in. So as much as she came back like she was triumphant right after, China put out a statement that was the exact opposite. Now, let me ask you, because they own a lot of our treasuries and bonds. What if China and Japan and some of these countries decided, you know what, we're not going to pay up. We're going to default on everything that we have of America. Would we just collapse overnight? Like, that's what they're pushing for, it seems.
Yes. Well, they've been stopping or heavily reducing buying. And the other thing they can do at any time is they can sell. And if once they start selling treasuries into the market, it's like the government issuing it, right? So you know, China has around $800-900 billion. They used to have over $1 trillion. So they've reduced that and they're buying gold. And that's publicly known. And so they could essentially crash the treasury market almost at any time. Now, what would happen at that point, if they just said they're going to do it, is the Federal Reserve, for example, did about $4 or $5 trillion worth of quantitative easing just for COVID. Their balance sheet got up to $8 trillion. And so China has $800 billion. And so believe it or not, the Federal Reserve would just say, fine, we're going to buy all your treasury bonds, China. But, you know, but the problem with that, and this is, you know, the whole nature of the BRICS, is the reason they held those treasuries is China is the world's largest net importer of energy. And Saudi Arabia only takes, or at least in the past, has only taken dollars. And right. So what they do is they know they need to spend dollars to buy oil. And Saudi Arabia wants that. So they would hold those treasuries. And if they can work out a system, which they basically are,
right,
where Saudi Arabia will take yuan, the Chinese currency, then they'll use those yuan to buy whatever they want from China. And because they're not going to be able to spend all the yuan that China is going to have to give them, they're going to net settle or even up with gold. Right. And they're going to take the dollar out of the system. And that's what people don't understand, the dollar in the system. If you're on a foreign exchange market and you have, Turkish lira and you want to buy Japanese yen, you don't sell Turkish lira and buy Japanese yen. You sell Turkish lira, buy United States dollars, and then you sell United States dollars to everything goes through the dollar.
Right.
Just in foreign currency transactions, there's over $100 trillion US dollars floating around in foreign currency markets because the dollar is the intermediary of exchange. The entire dollar system is, I believe, on the verge of collapse. And, you know, July is going to be the 80th anniversary of Bretton Woods. It was July 1944. And, you know, it lasted 80 years, but it's falling apart before our eyes. And this is what it looks like. It looks like gold going up, you know, seemingly almost every day. It's pulling back a little bit, but, you know, it can't go up $50 every day. But, you know, it almost has been doing that.
Yeah. Silver, too, it looks like is going up as well. So there's the whole silver market also following gold steps. Now, let me ask you what this means. So I noticed that now 28 states have put in bills to make gold and silver legal tender in their state. And it appears that a lot of states are also buying and hoarding gold within their states. What is that about? Is that states taking action to protect their state themselves? Because that seems contrary and it's not being covered in the news, but I've been keeping an eye and now we're up to 28 states and some of them are blue states. They're not just red states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, people are understanding that the dollar's value. I mean, you can't look at it against other fiat currencies like the euro. Like the dollar is going up against the euro. It's going, which is again, that will collapse the world market. People need a cheap dollar because if you have the dollar too strong, it bankrupts emerging markets. It destroys things for a host of reasons. Emerging markets, which, you know, pay their, they borrow in dollars. They don't borrow. Brazil doesn't borrow most of their money in reals. They borrow in dollars. So all these things are big problems. And so the currency is being devalued in real terms. And like in my home state, North Carolina, Yeah, the bill, I don't think it's been passed or signed into law, but we're a state that has a surplus. So right. we actually have, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars sitting around right now. And when you have that, you don't put it into a bank because a bank is only guaranteed to 250,000. Right. There's only one place you put it. You put it into treasuries. You put it into US bonds. And the dollar's going down. And even though those bonds are paying out 4 or 5% interest now, they know that the real inflation rate is higher than that. And so they're saying, well, let's put it into gold. And so I think gold is being seen as the only true store of value left, that you can't go into euros or yen or dollars or right. even Chinese yuan. If you want to maintain purchasing power with your money, you have to put it into gold and silver. And you know, people are trying to claim that Bitcoin is going to do this too. And you know, I don't know what the future exactly holds for Bitcoin, but I do know this, like, you know, Bitcoin hasn't been through world wars. It hasn't been through plagues. It hasn't been through, you know, everything that gold has done over thousands of years. And I worry that Bitcoin, you know, the powers that be don't like it. And I think there's going to be easy, there could be easy excuses for them to shut it down, you right. know, overnight. You
corruption. Know? I mean, I see what they're doing. They're messaging even through the World Economic Forum about corruption in Bitcoin. And all I'm thinking is, oh, they want to shut that down because they want everyone, because the central bank digital currency is only one aspect of the track and trace surveillance. They want everyone on the global digital ID. They want this World Health Organization to pass so that everyone's on that. It's all about interoperability to them. And one thing that I do want to see, get your take on, is there's been a lot of talk lately in the circles I travel in that the sanctions that were placed on Russia in the beginning of the instigation towards the Russian Ukraine disaster, as far as I'm concerned, the sanctions placed on Russia actually did not hurt Russia. In fact, it pushed Russia closer to the BRICS nations and China and everyone else, and they found ways around it. But Putin and Lavrov and all of them, right when the sanctions came, said that they were planning on it. They knew this was going to happen for a long time. And there's been some talk out there with people saying that they believe maybe that the entire sanction model on Russia was really about isolating us inside to go towards the central bank digital currency rather than punishing Russia, that the outcome was going to be obvious, that the BRICS nations would double their speed towards creating whatever they're going to create, a gold-backed currency, but that the nations that are stuck on the other side, that would be the NATO nations, the US, the Five Eyes nations, actually are the ones that are going to be suffering from, in the long term, from these sanctions against Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Russia, oil flows, you know, no matter what, you know, it gets out. I mean, Iran's doing 3.6 billion barrels a day. And I think, you know, China is probably, you know, China usually will side with Russia, but there's certain times when they won't. I think Russia would like to see the Middle East blow up right now a little bit. It would drive up oil prices. But China is not a producer like Russia. China is the world's largest importer of oil. And so I think the reason why, you know, China, like Iran and some of these people are not going even more hog wild, is because China's back there telling Russia, you tell Iran, you know, we don't want the whole thing to blow up right now, because, you know, China's economy is kind of in the tank, and they don't want oil going to $120 a barrel. So that's just one side note. But to your point about, you know, the sanctions, yes, the sanctions, number one, they didn't hurt Russia. Number two, they gave Russia more freedom and more latitude to do things that it's always wanted to do, but right. it couldn't do, to strike one-off deals, circumventing the petrodollar, the use of dollar for oil, and facilitated the development of this counter system to the dollar, which is coming into place. And if you're somebody, you know, like a Yellen, who I do believe has a strategic mind for these types of things, as misguided as it is, that these people realize, like, they're going to have more power if all of a sudden, like, Putin and China together, they say, okay, we're going to all of a sudden yank the petro system away.
Right.
And so it needs to be phased out. They see the writing on the wall. They see what the BRICS are doing. And so this was like, okay, we need to get Russia out of it, because the world system's got to realize that they're not going to be playing this United States dollar ball game anymore.
Right.
And so the sooner they're out of here, the better. And then China will start to fall out of it. And then you're going to have just two camps. You know, you're going to have Japan, New Zealand, Australia in Asia, and you're going to have, you know, the United States and the countries that are with us in Latin America, and you're going to have Western Europe, and then you're going to have the rest of the world. And we're heading into these two systems, and the casualty, I believe, is going to be the dollar. The dollar system is going to collapse. It's no longer going to be used for everything like it is now.
Yeah, I mean, that seems glaringly obvious. And again, all these people too, people have to remember that the BRICS nations, though they are on different sides when it comes to this, they're actually all involved in the, I call it the global parent company that is all after the Agenda 2030. They're all in on the surveillance. They're all meeting at Davos. Don't kid yourself. So there is a supra class that's running yes. a lot of this that we've talked about before. What I did notice and I thought was interesting is Costco is selling a tremendous amount of gold, I think $200 million, they said last month. So that means that middle America is actually waking up to gold. I also have a lot of people that watch my show. I do a show with Beverly Hills Precious Metals, often my friend Andrew. And what he's telling me too is people are putting their savings for, you know, for sending their kids to college, for what they're leaving their kids, you know, what the, for the grandkids, whatever, into gold in storage or delivering gold because they're preparing for it. But what I'm seeing happening all over the country, and certainly the Costco numbers certainly make me aware that it's not just the, you know, the savvy people out there that understand what's happening. Mm. What do you make of Costco just started selling gold? I think you can only buy 5 bars at a time. Mm. But the numbers coming out of Costco's gold selling is outrageous.
Yeah, there are tons of people that are totally tuned into this yeah. and that they don't need to have master's degrees in business or even any community college to understand right. it. Like, you know, all you got to do is go to the grocery store or the gas station and they're understanding the dollars are worthless or they're on their way to worthless. And so gold, I mean, people, you know, the investment community, I mean, they love poo-pooing gold because it's hard to make money on gold. It's not like a Larry Fink exactly. fund where you're collecting 30 basis points, you know, every single year and you're able to. So they don't want that. They don't want people to know that since 1997, gold and the S&P 500 have basically done the same thing. They're both up right around 550% from 1997. Right. They don't want people to know that if you bought gold in the year 2000 and sold it in the year 2010, you made an awesome return. If you bought stocks in 2000 and sold them in 2010, you lost money. Right. So, exactly. I mean, people think, well, oh, they'll tell you, gold is only for, you know, preserving wealth. Well, here's the thing. In the very long run, it preserves its value. That's the long run mission of gold. But gold price has been suppressed. And so yes, gold has yes. to catch up. And that's when you get these periods of an economic tumult where you could have crisis in the regulated markets and gold catches up to where it should be. And you have a decade, let's say from now until the next 10, until 2034, where gold does 2, 3, 4 times better than the stock market. Those things happen. They happen recently. So
yeah.
I think people are waking up to that. It's not a fool's game to put your money into gold. And the last thing, you know, talking about, I think it was at the beginning of your question. I'm sorry, it slipped my mind, but there was one thing I wanted to add on to it. But you bring up so many points and there's just so much around all this, it's super important.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just that the average American citizen that is not, doesn't really follow the markets, isn't that savvy, is if they are shopping in small town America for gold, you know, that the word is out and people aren't believing it. What's very scary is that the trust, we've seen this in many different areas, but the trust in the financial system and the people running the financial system, I mean, there are hundreds of millions of people around the world that look at BlackRock and Larry Fink and think this guy's got too much power. BlackRock's is too huge. A lot of people that have learned about BlackRock and Vanguard and what they play all over the world, especially Fink's connections with the Great Reset and the CCP and other things, their pensions are invested there. Their everything that they have are invested there and people want to get out. Now, I have seen a couple states pull out their pensions from there. But at the same time, you know, people do feel like they're trapped, that somehow we allowed BlackRock and Vanguard, BlackRock especially, to get so big, because on the back end, doesn't BlackRock also control Aladdin that is what everyone uses to do their analysis and stuff. So this power that BlackRock has is really becoming a common conversation, you know, in the supermarket, in the laundromat. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are like, what is this BlackRock and why do they have so much power? They're running. And a lot of the DEI, CRT, a lot of what's happening with corporations is coming from them because they're the biggest shareholders. Is there anything that anyone can do about the size and power of this one company and their counterparts? Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.
If you're keeping some money in the market still, I mean, there are ways, all the major index funds and things like that, there are competitors out there. You know, there are funds that might be a little less liquid. They might not have as much trading volume, but they kind of do the same things more or less. There's investing in gold. So there's ways to kind of, you know, circumvent them, but sometimes it is very hard to do. And, you know, talking about, you know, these financial elites, what they're preparing for, the right. surveillance state, the super elites that you mentioned, the higher thing. I think they're understanding that they've got like a plan A, which is, you know, we're going to try to manage through this. There's going to be massive inflation. We're going to put in the CBDCs. But on the other hand, they also realize that people are getting the gist of this. The bulk of Americans are in a worse situation now than their parents were. And there's a lot of discontent, and this is the breeding ground for civil unrest. Right. And so they also want to be in place with the FEMA supplies and the surveillance state and all of these other things, because when the you know what hits the fan, they realize that people might not keep going along with this, and it could start to get ugly and the pitchforks start coming out. They're well aware of, you know, when people say let them eat cake, you know what happened to him, her neck got cut off, and they don't want the guillotine coming down on their heads when people start to realize what these people have been doing to us and say, okay, enough is enough, you know? And so they're protecting themselves on all fronts. They're protecting themselves with their money. They're protecting themselves with forces. They're building bunkers. I mean, they're doing everything that they can, because they know that the elite system, I mean, there's too many elites. And what's happened is there's not enough power positions. This is a theory by a guy, Peter Titchen. It's like an 80-year cycle where the elites overbreed. The elites want more wealth. The only way they get that wealth is by taking it from the masses. The masses' position goes down. You could look, the same thing happened between 1820 and 1860 in this country. The real wages as a percentage of GDP was cut in half between 1820 and 1860. The same thing has happened between 1970 and today. And so these exact same sorts of situations are happening. You're getting too many elites, so then you have counter elites. You've got, you know, Hillary Clinton and say George Bush, and then the counter elites of Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump. And, you know, I'm not equating Bernie and Donald, but they're both tapping into this general discontent of the massive population that sees the system as totally corrupt and wants to totally tear it down and put up something. I'm on the free market side. You know, we need free market solutions. That's what's really going to create the wealth and the prosperity, not the socialist side. But it's the same sort of sentiment that's driving people to Bernie Sanders. That's also driving people to Donald Trump. I just think the people going to Bernie Sanders are misguided.
Yeah, me too. I do 100%. And the thing here too is you see a lot of things coming out of FinCEN. The SEC got some pushback about their natural asset class we talked about last time, which is another ploy to centralize wealth. But we do really realize that we are not being told the truth about our own futures, about our own destiny, about how we're going to take care of our family. And I think that's why more and more people are looking at this. Now, what... what could the government, I mean, I, at this point, the government goes after monopolies and all of that, but they won't even go near the banking monopolies, the banking, you know, superclass, the idea that BlackRock controls most of the S&P 500, and then they're controlling the messaging through advertising and, you know, getting right to the people, as Larry Fink would call it, going direct to the people, the bankers and the corporations. I mean, this is a mess. This is not what America should be. Is there anything the government could do to, you know, kind of deal with this idea that we have three financial institutions that basically own America with a guy that's very, very involved? You know, there's a lot of people from BlackRock that have been in and out of Obama regime. There's, you know, a lot of people from Goldman Sachs, a lot of people from Morgan that are, you know, they're 1 foot in D.C., 1 foot in Wall Street. And people see that. If a Donald Trump or somebody came in and said, you know, we got to do something about this, could they? What could they do at this point?
Well, I would love to see Donald Trump come out openly and say he wants to either abolish or completely reorganize the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
Because the Federal Reserve, the member banks are all, I mean, the reserve banks, which is where the power is, not in the governing board, they're owned by the private banks. That's the way it's always been. It's the way that it still is. So the central bank is the money elite banking classes kind of conduit directly into government finances, treasury. And it's, you know, that's where that's the nexus of it, you know?
Yes.
And so if we moved away from the Federal Reserve, I think that's one thing. The other thing is the Constitution is in we have so much in the federal government that they're doing that is unconstitutional. And we have constitutionalists in the Supreme Court. I mean, if we could really, you know, if Donald Trump could say, you know, we're going to charge the U.S. attorneys around the country to find cases that we can take to the courts to start to dismantle this welfare social services state from constitutional perspectives that do not need Congress, because Congress is the stumbling block, because all the Democrats are on the wrong sides of things. Half of the Republicans are bought and paid for on the wrong side of things. And Congress is a stumbling block.
Right.
But if we could get the White House, and we have the Supreme Court, and we use the Constitution, and we do what we can to abolish or reorganize the Fed, I mean, that would be a fantastic start to getting this on the right track.
Yeah, I think that that's true for many things. For me, I agree with you. First of all, the 10th Amendment, most of the stuff that's, you know, 2 million people work for the blob in D.C. That's just ludicrous. That's not what it was supposed to be. But like you said, good point about the Fed. And in general, a lot of these agencies, EPA, Department of Energy, Department of Education, these are not constitutional agencies. They violate actually the Constitution, and they should, a lot of this stuff should go back to the states. And you made one point earlier that I wanted to, before I let you go, ask you about. My thing too, I believe that if the states balanced their own budgets and really dealt with the states and stopped taking money from the federal government, that would also be a step towards freedom and a step towards serving their people. We have two senators in every state. I mean, Congress, you know, whatever, but there's senators in every state that should be putting their constituents and their state first, and their state legislature and their state governor. And to me, when I look at every state, if they just balanced their budget within and didn't take money from the federal blob and didn't take all these grants that are not grants, they're taxpayers stealing to me. But every state could actually be, in my opinion, self-sufficient and then run their state much better if they weren't taking money. Taking money from the federal government is what's destroying our country. Mm-hmm. Is that possible? Yeah. Do you think that states could actually take that action?
I do. I definitely do. That's a great point. Like, I remember when I was a kid, well, I was like 19, and I was thinking, you know, why is it 21 to drink everywhere? You know?
Right.
And I started researching it a little bit. And, you know, it's totally a state's right to decide what drinking age. But why is it 21? Because they use some like interstate commerce clause, federal highway money. You're not going to get it unless you raise it to 21. And so the states, in a sense, have allowed themselves to be bribed away and their rights given away to the federal government in return for this money. I think the solution, because it's gotten so bad, is if you had a state that said, you know what, we don't care if we're going to lose all of our federal money.
Right.
But then at the same time, we're going to pass laws in our state that are true free market capitalist laws. Yes. You would see capital start flocking there. You would see companies and corporations and wealthy individuals, and that state would get more in revenue from right. all of the business activity and what is going on that the federal government table scraps that they're being fed right now exactly. and being put on a leash by. And so if you could have a coalition of governors, you know, if you had a DeSantis in Florida or an Abbott in Texas, or you had people come together and say, we're going to make a free economic zone in America. And we're going to do it with all of the states' rights that we have as right. states and give a big middle finger to the federal government and their money, then they do it. And it's only the federal government's money that's stopping the states from doing this.
I agree 100%. And that's why we need really strong governors. And you have to really pay attention now. You know, when I was younger, it was like, you know, you just check down the boxes. You're not really looking. But everyone that we vote for now at this point in our lives, in the legislature, in the city council, school board, all the way up to the governor, these people have a tremendous amount of power to save us state by state. And we really have to look for real constitutionalists, regardless of, you know, what letters after their name, or if they're independent, what are they doing? What are their actions? Because I firmly believe that if we had a coalition of governors that got together like we have right now with AGs, if the state AGs that keep getting together, like when Abbott put in the bill about the border, then we had 20 AGs write a letter supporting him. Well, if those 20 governors of those 20 AGs decided to say, you know what, we're going to go back to like putting our state first. Whatever's going on in DC blob isn't working. We're not going down with that ship and started to actually do what you're saying. I mean, we would be far better off. It would not take that long. And at that point, you know, you can start to dismantle that blob. I mean, so much of our taxpayer dollars are going to giant bloated groups. And then a lot of, as we've talked about before, a lot of this money that's going to NGOs is through grants that are taxpayer money. If it's an NGO, fund yourself. Don't include the government and everything else. So hopefully some of these changes will be made. But I love doing shows with you. And I just want to remind everyone, go to the partners page at themelkshow.com. Go down to the BHPM link right there, and you can ask me questions, and I can also ask Mel as well. And you just put in the notes section, like what your question is about gold or silver or anything else. And then Mel will come back and we'll talk about some things. So if you have questions for him, send them to me either on the partners page, go there and go to where I have the gold section. You can ask a question or send to Ask Mel. It's on the front page. And I have any questions, I'll have Mel come back on. So send me some questions if you have them for him. And Mel, tell everyone where they can find you. Again, you have a great book out that it uses fiction, which makes it a little easier, but it teaches real lessons about the economy and what is going on. So it's a great book too. So tell everyone where you are, how to find you, and how to find your book.
Yeah, exactly. So my book is Quaz. It's a financial thriller. Surprise, surprise. It's a world on the brink of economic collapse after the passing of a $9 trillion spending bill. And it's got all kinds of things with reserve currencies, gold, silver, all the issues we touched on. I put it in a fictional form. It's got great reviews. It's available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And you can learn more about me at Mel Mattison, M-A-T-T-I-S-O-N is my last name.com. So Mel Mattison, or just search Quaz, Q-U-O-Z, financial thriller, and you'll find the book.
Great. Thank you so much. And send any questions you have for him, and we'll have him back, and we'll do some question and answer. Thank you so much, Mel, for being here. You're a wealth of knowledge. It is good to find an honest person talking about the economy. They are few and far between right now. So I really appreciate you being here, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko was ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko. From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out Mel K Superfoods today.